Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Today we have on the show with us Wesley J. Smith to talk about human genetic engineering. Wesley Smith is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute and among the world's foremost critics of assisted suicide and utilitarian bioethics. In 2004, he was named by the National Journal as one of the nation's top expert thinkers in bioengineering for his work in bioethics. In 2008, the Human Life Foundation named him a great defender of life. And just a few weeks ago, he was named to the Terry Schiavo Life and Hope Network Board of Directors. His Human Exceptionalism blog, hosted by National Review Online, is one of the premier blogs dealing with human life and dignity. His latest book is the newly updated and revised edition of Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, a warning about the dangers of the modern bioethics movement. Smith has published hundreds of articles and opinion columns nationally and internationally, and has appeared on thousands of television and radio programs. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Sarah. Good to talk to you.
With a report in the New York Times in August of scientists using CRISPR to successfully remove a dangerous mutation from an embryo, I wanted to discuss more about human genetic engineering. Our long-time listeners know that Darwinian survival of the fittest thinking was foundational to a lot of the eugenics arguments and activity of the early 20th century, both here in America and in Nazi Germany. And if you're a thoroughgoing Darwinian materialist, you don't see humans as made in the image of God or being exceptional from other animals in any important way that would lend them fundamental human rights. The idea that humans are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights really goes by the board. Fortunately, not all evolutionists go down that path, but some, like Jerry Coyne, do. And it seems like we're seeing more and more going back down that path. Do you see this as a danger, and how might this new CRISPR technology play into those efforts?
Well, anytime you reject human exceptionalism, there's a terrible danger to universal human rights, because if each and every one of us isn't intrinsically and equally valuable simply and merely because we are human beings, that is, objectively, once you're human, just being human is what brings equality and rights, well, then you end up with a different question you have to ask. If you say no to the question, does human life have ultimate meaning simply and merely because it's human? Then you have to ask another question. Well, what does give meaning? And there are various answers to people who say no to human exceptionalism. For example, Peter Singer will say, well, it's being a person. Now, listeners may think, well, isn't that the same thing as being human? And in Peter Singer's thinking, the answer is absolutely not. So he believes, as do many in utilitarian bioethics, he's certainly not an outlier. He's just the most famous promoter of this idea, that what gives value is mental capacities, the ability to be self-aware over time, or the ability to value your own life. So in this construct, there's such a thing as a human non-person. Who are these human non-persons? Well, embryos and fetuses would be considered non-persons precisely because they are not self-aware over time and they cannot value their own life. Some people may think, well, that's okay, but the same denigration, if you will, applies to newborn babies for several months, perhaps, even I've heard up to 2 years, because human babies do not have those capacities either. And that's why many in utilitarian bioethics actually believe in what's called afterbirth abortion, meaning that just as they believe it is acceptable to abort a fetus, say at 3 months, 5 months, or even 8 or 9 months, some do, then it should be all right to kill a baby if the baby does not suit the parent's interests or values, or if the baby has a disability or serious illness. That also includes people who have lost capacities that they might have once had. For example, people who were in the condition such as many will recall Terry Schiavo was in. They will say that is a non-person. And in fact, during the Terry Schiavo brouhaha, when I was writing quite a bit to try to help save her life, I had a debate on Court TV with a bioethicist, and I said, well, is Terry a person? And he said, no. I said, does that mean that her organs can be taken? And he said, yes, just like any other piece of property. So you can see that if you reject human exceptionalism, the intrinsic equal dignity of human life, and the converse, that under human exceptionalism, that only we as moral beings have duties, one of which is to protect each other and our moral value, you end up with a denigration of universal human rights and an impossibility of it, because it leads to the very kind of eugenics thinking that you mentioned. Now, as you also mentioned, many in neo-Darwinism just look at us. Some will even say there's no such thing as species distinction because we all evolved out of the same primordial ooze. Well, that's just ridiculous thinking, because obviously there is no other species like a human being. And I submit that the differences in human life versus any other life are not only differences in kind, but differences in quality so huge that they amount to Mount Everest versus an anthill. And therefore, whether or not we are created in the image of God, whether or not we were intelligently designed by some force that has put together the world and set the amazing complexity we see in motion, or by a purposeless, meaningless, accidental action of materialistic forces, the differences in human beings are such, and they're self-evident, that we stand apart from all other species. We are exceptional, and that is the necessary ingredient to universal human rights, which is the backbone of Western civilization. If we give that up, we're going to give up liberty, and we're going to give up all that we've achieved and attained as human beings in the West over the last 500, 600, 800 years.
Do you think that we are on the verge of a new era of eugenics, and what will the society of the future think it means to be a person and have a productive life?
I think a new era of eugenics with sharper teeth than the earlier eugenics certainly threatens us. I don't know that I would say we're on the verge, because there are people who are saying, wait a second, we cannot go down this road, because we cannot treat the weak and vulnerable in ways that denigrate their value and oppress and harass and exploit them. But there are movements that would allow that. Many in utilitarian bioethics and even in transplant medical ethics, organ transplant, would like to be able to take organs from people before they are dead. That is, killing them for their organs. And I've written about that a lot in my blogging and in my articles. People can look it up on Discovery Institute website. If you go to my articles archive, you'll see plenty of articles about that. Also, if you take a look at what's happening in the Netherlands and in Belgium, we've already reached those kinds of ideas where people who want to be euthanized, primarily the mentally ill, not the dying, but the mentally ill, and people with neuromuscular disabilities, do receive, if they request it, not only euthanasia, being killed, but then minutes later their organs harvested. So we are in a situation where kind of utilitarian eugenics type of thinking threatens us. But people are aware and fighting back. Those who believe in universal human rights, those who believe in the intrinsic dignity, equal moral worth of human life, are fighting back. And I'm really happy to be able to be part of that effort through my work with the Discovery Institute.
What ways do you think that human genetic engineering should be regulated?
That's an important question. And what is concerning me is that we're not even having that discussion. As you mentioned earlier, CRISPR can genetically engineer any organism in any cell. That makes it potentially the most dangerous technology ever invented by human beings, perhaps other than the atomic bomb and the hydrogen bomb. And yet, other than some arcane scientific symposia, we don't see a coming to grips with this potential danger and benefit. We have to say there's also tremendous potential benefit here. But we have to be able to regulate this in a way through democratic processes and through ethical rules and regulations and expectations, as well as law, to make sure that we get benefits from these new technologies without ending into a dystopian, eugenic kind of Brave New World approach to human life. But we're not even having that discussion. Unfortunately, the Trump administration doesn't seem to have any interest in bioethical issues outside of abortion, but there's so much more to these issues than abortion. And the scientists, many of whom have the idea, well, we get to decide the ethics. And this is too important an issue just to let the scientists decide. Any powerful technology, any powerful sector needs checks and balances. And I don't see that discussion happening. And that's unfortunate because we should not just pretend this isn't here and that this isn't being moved forward exponentially, because it is. We've also seen human cloning accomplished through the same process that made Dolly the sheep. So we have right now before us everything that is needed to eventually develop the technology to not only do, we might call, therapeutic human engineering, but also enhancing, as the transhumanists want, who want to make a post-human species, so that we might find ourselves allowing embryos, if we ever determine how these genetic interactions work, to improve for intelligence, which is a favored project of the transhumanists. I noted in one of my articles, well, they talk a lot about improving intelligence, but never our capacity to love. And getting back to the eugenics issue, who are the people who can love perhaps most selflessly of any other human beings? I'd say it's people with Down syndrome. They're the most gentle, loving, sweet people you'd ever want to meet. And of course, anyone who's met somebody with Down syndrome knows that. And yet there's a pogrom underway to wipe them off the face of the earth through eugenic abortion. And if it ever comes to pass, potentially infanticide. And it's terrible. Iceland brags, if you can believe it, that there are no Down syndrome babies born there. And that's because they're all killed before they can be born. It's a terrible situation. And the CRISPR concept and human cloning concept puts into sharp focus the need for us to start looking at these technologies, seeing what would be acceptable and areas in which we should not tread.
How best can we paint an accurate picture of human genetic engineering and then work up the political will to regulate it here in the U.S.?
That's a very important and interesting question. I think we have to alert people that this isn't only about health. What we find in our society today is that for many people, the purpose of society is no longer to protect the lives and welfare of each and every member of society or each and every human being. Rather, it's to eliminate suffering. And if you think that the highest call of society is to eliminate suffering, that easily morphs into eliminating the sufferer and can, if we're not careful, unleash forces that will exploit the most weak and vulnerable among us. And let me give you an example of that. During the embryonic stem cell debate in the 2000s during George W. Bush's administration, I was on a talk television show and we were talking about embryonic stem cell research and human cloning research. And a father called and he was pretty upset with me because I was claiming that we should not use any human life, even nascent human life, as an object, as so much corn crop or as potter's clay. And he said, look, I have a baby who was born with a serious disability. And you're trying to make it so that my child doesn't receive any kind of potential healing or therapy for her affliction or her disability. And I, of course, said that wasn't true. And I said, well, let me work this through with you, sir. If you learned that embryonic stem cells could cure your daughter, that would be good for you, right? And he said, yes, anything. That's a quote. Yes, anything. And then I said, well, what if in order to get the best stem cells, rather than the embryonic, which are pretty difficult to control and they can proliferate in ways not intended, what if you use fetal stem cells, say from a fetus at 6 months, so that we would gestate, if we ever develop them, into an artificial womb, a fetus for 6 months, and then terminate the fetus and use those stem cells? Would that be acceptable to you? And he said, yes, anything. I said, what if we found that actually the best tissues to use in this regard would be newborn infants? And we could use their tissues and cells to help cure these various disabilities. Would that be acceptable to you? And he said, yes, anything. And I said, sir, you've just put your own daughter on the slab because you said your daughter was born with a serious disability. And you have now said that people like her can be used instrumentally to help other people. So this is where that kind of thinking leads. And he had nothing to say about that because, understandably, he was so caught up in his own daughter's situation, he didn't think about the principles of the bigger picture. And those are the things that we're not talking about today. When does life become sacrosanct? Does it ever become sacrosanct? How do we put into place protective measures that make sure that we do research that would help provide for ameliorating human suffering without crossing lines that will then allow us to exploit one group of human beings for the benefit of another group of human beings. Those discussions can and should be held. They can be productive, but again, we're not doing that. And the only way to do that is to show, I think, that there's more going on here than health, and also let people understand that they can understand the technology. Doing these things is difficult. I mean, it's a very complex, arcane area of science, but to understand what is being done and what hopes to be accomplished and what the dangers are is not difficult. And that discussion, as we're doing here in this podcast, needs further clarification and a higher intensity in the public square. But it's hard to do that because we are so caught up in celebrity. We're so caught up in things that make little difference, if any difference, in the lives of human beings, that getting these important discussions really addressed is hard. I also think there's a tremendous place for this in the popular culture, in movies and books, fiction and television shows, which we have seen some of that. I think the most prophetic book ever written is Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. It was in 1932, and he foresaw human cloning. He foresaw the potential that we could use these technologies to create different castes of people, that we could end up having technology destroy family life and turn society into a very sterile, hedonistic circumstance without any kind of deep meaning or moral importance. So I think the popular culture has a very strong place here because people can get ideas of the stakes by looking at things that also entertain.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and talking about this important topic.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity.
This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.